bakalım.
We're not gonna make it.
Right, bakalım. Hikaye.
That was just a starter. Now the menu continues. I take it both you and your friend are enjoying the game.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 91 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Dave Pallas of 5 Minutes of Mystery.
I'm terribly mysterious that way. Thank you for having me on, Movie Rob. And yes, for my birthday episode today, I decided to bring some friends in. From Batman, I brought in Niall. And hello. From Next Scene Pod, I brought in Sean.
Oh, wow. Welcome, guys.
I trust you and your friend are enjoying the podcast. I'm back, baby. I was here already. And I hope just when I thought I was out, they put me back in. The wrong third movie in the trilogy, I guess.
but still, you know.
Oh.
Still good. So welcome, also, welcome everyone.
I thought that we had that debate though about the whole, the fact that like, I still instinctively call this the Die Hard trilogy, even though it hasn't been a trilogy in like 20 years or something.
Oh yeah, no, it's still real to me.
Mm-hmm. No, Niall, it's okay.
Well, thank you for having me back, everyone.
Niall, it's perfectly okay to call this it's perfectly okay to call this one a trilogy. You know, because as we all know, the first three of these movies are nearly perfect, and then they have these two extra movies, 4 and 5. You know, so which I'll get to somehow.
I'll defend 4 to a certain extent as well. There's the problems that start to slip into 4 are actually kind of evident in this minute as well, weirdly enough, where it starts to get into superhuman John McClane and stuff. But hey, we'll save it. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Oh, yeah. Right. Goodness gracious, yeah.
Exactly. All right. So minute 91 begins with Raymond questioning Dexter's idea and ends with a car flipping over. So we ended things on Friday with Lambert basically talking at the school assembly, and both Raymond and Dexter are starting to question, you know, maybe it has something to do with Tony. I don't know. So, you know, we start off here with basically Raymond saying, you mean like they're after us? Nah. And then Dexter goes, Tony squealed on us. No, he didn't. Come on. Well, where are you going? And we see, you know, they just leave the assembly. You know, it shows that this is really good police work, that they're making sure that all of the exits and entrances of the auditorium are blocked well so that kids can't get lost along the way.
It really is. Yeah, it really is insane that they didn't have like teachers at every door here. And I don't even know about bathroom breaks, because I feel like if you had kids sitting there for like an hour singing Row Row, at some point one of them is going to ask to go to the bathroom. Just out of pure boredom. But
all the
water
talk, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. The water talk. I mean, I'm very curious, like, you know, if at any point they were going to thinking about confronting Tony, or I guess they were like too worried that if they approached him, Tony would actually squeal.
Well, do you think Tony's in their school class? I don't think Tony's in the school. I think Tony is just some hood on the street.
Tony could be one of the teachers. You're right. Yeah, no, you're right. I think he was like some, yeah, right. I think how they described him in the beginning, he definitely sounded like a neighborhood kid on the street who was just like, might be slinging, might just be doing like delinquent stuff.
Exactly. Especially not in elementary school, the type of stuff they're doing that they're going to find him in a dump. Yeah.
Do you think Tony at any point during this day was like, oh man, these cops were everywhere looking for that speaker set? like he thought it was the other way around. He thought those kids squealed on him. He's like, wow, these cops are everywhere today.
Did we ever get a name of the kid who's like, you know, it's like Christmas, you could steal City Hall? Like, could that be Tony?
It's not Tony. He does. He here in this movie, he's just known as Kid on Bike Number One. But I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago when he was on, and he's an actor who in every single movie that he has acted in, he played like a kid named like Carmine or something like that. You know, he has like this really strange name. Here it is. The kid's real name is Patrick Borriello. And Patrick Borriello, he has like, I think, 6 IMDb credits. 10, sorry, 10. And he's known as Gino. That's the thing. He's got like 4 movies where he's named Gino. Another one where he's called Vinny, Slick, Crazy Angelo. That,
he's really, you know, just like, and the fact that he sounds like a New Jersey gangster, and then every name of every character he plays is the name of like a Sopranos cast member as well.
Yeah, he's like, exactly. He's like the Italian version of Hector from Fast and Furious always being called Hector in like all of his movie credits on IMDb.
Is he still working though? Because like, that kid's iconic.
Yes, he has. He actually has one credit from 2024 in the movie Jersey Bread, where he plays Crazy Angelo.
All these cops are into something. You could steal all the bread.
He's still going like around Christmas. With a butterfinger hanging out of his mouth. Just like...
Well, he doesn't have a bike anymore, but still. Yeah. He had his bike stolen by John.
Yeah. God.
That would have been a callback I would have appreciated. And they could have saved Die Hard 5 if John McClane, you know, kid on bike became man with car or something. Like that. this
That would have been interesting, but it would have been a little. It's not like it's what's his name, Sheriff Roscoe from James Bond, where he keeps popping up all these different places around the world.
Yeah.
Also, should say too, Dave, as well, like happy birthday for your birthday episode, because I know this film's a big deal to you, and obviously to myself as well. So it's just like, it's nice to be on, to be able to talk to you on this particular occasion.
Yeah, this movie is the perfect like Saturday afternoon movie. I think this movie hits like diner ketchup, where you're like, you have it at home, you can always put Die Hard: The Vengeance on, there's no problem. But for, like, if you're like walking by, or someone's like got Netflix or HBO on, and this is on, you're like, oh well. I mean, this is it. I'm doing this now.
Yeah, totally. It was a day I was going through.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yes.
It's such a great movie.
It was the times like when I was going through, like, a couple years ago, like really bad, like severe anxiety spikes. And I remember one of the things I put on, because I was like, yep, Melanie's going to put me in a good mood. It's going to be this. And you know what? It did. So thank you, McTiernan, et al.
Definitely. Yeah, it's just one of the, like, I think you guys probably talked about it with previous guests, Rob, but like, it's insane how good the supporting cast is in this movie. They're only in this film, and they have, you know, what lines of time they have, they really eat the scenes up, and you're like, you don't mind that you're not with John for like maybe 10 minutes at a time, because you're just like, oh, you're like Lambert's great. You're like Walter, I would love to see Walter Cobb and then Vincent Hanna from Heat. Like, I would love to see those two in a diner, because they just approach situations completely different, but they are technically like, they're almost, I think they are at the same rank. They're like both like captain or lieutenant of like the current major crimes division. So it's just like the two of them can do the same job, but how they approach it very differently. Walter is really rational and he talks through these things, and Hannah is just like a cracked out bug who's just like, I gotta get him. Whoa, baby.
I'd also love to see just too like a big meetup of all these like grizzled big screen supporting cops, like what called Gil Heron from Beverly Hills Cop, the guy who's in charge of Foley and stuff, like back in Chicago. It's like him, just get all these guys, like the captain from Last Action Hero, who's also the captain in like Cobra or whatever as well, like all these just like on the verge of a heart attack, like senior ranking cops, care home together. Just see like, this staff on, you know, on there 24/7, just trying to calm these guys down because they've been so mentally broken.
I think.
Joey Pants on that list also.
I remember reading the novelization of this film, and I remember how they introduced Walter Cobb, and like they introduced him like having Rolaids right next to his coffee. I thought that was. I was like, perfect, just that stereotype of like, he's already got ulcers and shit. Like, he's already dealing with stuff, and the first bomb is like just gone off.
Yeah. I'm going through currently in my current work, I'm going through a really stressful time at the minute too, but some days I have to remind myself, like, at least I'm not in charge of the police force of a major metropolitan city during the hottest day of the year, And I have like one renegade pain in my ass cop going around who won't play by the rules. It's like, because those guys have got it rough. You know, there's no charity fund for the overworked commissioners and captains of the New York State Police Department. You know?
God.
True. All right. So Dave, you said you read the novelization. Yes. You know that in the novelization, his name is not Walter Cobb.
Yeah, you're right.
As well as in the credits of this movie, he's not Walter Cobb. In the credits, he's listed as Arthur Cobb.
Wow, in the credits, he's listed as all. Wow, that's insane. You're right. Do you remember the author?
Yes.
I should have got the book. It's at my parents' house. Like, it's still in my old bedroom. But I read a little bit of the script, at least the ones that are online, and they have so much dialogue of like, all these cops are at a bar, and I'm like, it's not like the only scene. If I wanted to add one extra scene, would have been when Lambert and Kowalski go to McClane's apartment, because it does sound like a mess, mm-hmm. and it helps like them dig into him when he's in the van when we introduce him. But
well, in the script there is no Kowalski. It's Ricky.
Yeah,
Ricky doesn't die in the script, and there is no Kowalski. They added Connie.
That's so funny.
In later versions.
Wow, that's so funny. It shows you how long I've read the book ago. I just assimilated book and movie into like this script in my head. It's kind of like what I imagined Samuel Jackson's extra scenes in SWAT that were not in the movie, but when I read the novelization, they got Samuel Jackson's dialogue so well that I thought, oh, it must be a deleted scene. And no one knows what I'm talking about. Like, no, it's just in the novelization. It's just not in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they did in novelizations in the 80s and 90s. I used to collect all those books. I'd go to like the used bookstores, and I remember I had the novelization of Platoon and the novelization of this movie and Back to the Future and all these things. And they have all these extra scenes and dialogue that were either added by, I guess, anonymous author done the novelization, or it's from different parts of the script that were cut, yeah. You know, and stuff like that.
Sometimes you get those, because I've got upstairs. I'm very happy to have it. I always like show it to people when they come around. The novelization of Howard the Duck, which was written by one of the guys who founded National Lampoon magazine, and he's just like, this film is ridiculous and stupid, and I'm just gonna go with this. So he just starts writing, like, just making up stuff, and like having like the narrator of the book is having conversations with God about like how terrible the story is.
Oh wow!
There's an entire chapter about a guy who's like manning the laser at the end to give him an entire backstory.
Oh, that's a damn good bit. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say though, because I don't think I ever realized until you mentioned there, Dave, about that scene in McClane's apartment in the novelization. I can't remember if it pops up in 4 and 5, but like it is kind of weird that we never see McClane in we never see him on his home turf, unless I guess like the streets of New York, I guess, are his home turf. But
yeah,
like,
this is as close as we get.
He is a character who's perpetually like, he's such a fish out of water. Every time you see him, he is perpetually like, you don't even see what his house is like. He's like, no, you'll never see him at rest in his armchair and like, yeah. He's always out in the go and stuff.
But come on, who wants to see
on a plane?
Who wants to see John McClane, you know, sitting in a Barco lounge or you know, watching TV? We want to see him.
I guess it's true.
We want to see him, you know, foil these terrorists that he just happens to keep falling into these situations, you know, with terrorism.
Yeah, I think it's true because, like, I thought the apartment probably would suit McClane, but like in the last Indiana Jones, there where they showed you like how Indiana Jones lives, and he's got this like little crap, little cruddy apartments, you know, above this and that and stuff, and you're just like, never wanted to see that. Like, I was kind of happy, just like, yeah, and he's just like, he's in the college, and then he's just like a rollicking adventurer. You know, you don't need to see how dingy his you know, living space is. Although with McClane, it would work because it's like, oh, I assume he lives in a.
No, but in all fairness,
around, he's gonna be living in a crap hole.
In all fairness, when talking about Indiana Jones, that's like 20 years after we're 25 years after. You know, we're done seeing Indiana Jones before him, but we do see his house.
Last Crusade,
that's the word.
But we see him as a kid, home with.
No, in Last Crusade, we see him at home, but we also see him. We see him as a kid, but we also see him later when he gets home to see that his house was ransacked.
Wait, was it ransacked or was that the Venice apartment?
No, both.
See, now
both.
we got Is it both? Okay, they ransacked both. Oh yeah, because of the diary.
That's
they
right.
keep ransacking because of the goddamn diary.
That's right.
Okay. Right, that's right.
That's right.
He has to keep emphasizing to everyone who comes in. It's like, look, my house is tidy, normally. Okay.
The Nazis are looking for the diary. I assure you. It's
I gotta use that next time I have company over. It's like I'm usually much neater, but you know, Nazis.
Sean, I've been to your house. Your house was neat 2 years ago. I can't say anything beyond that. I don't know what's happened in the last 2 years.
Okay.
Maybe a tornado hit it or something like that, or a twister. But you know.
Yeah.
But you know, at least I from what I saw, it was clean. Unless you threw everything, you know, under the bed sheets and put it upstairs or whatever it is. Yeah.
And also, as I was reminded just this week too, Indiana Jones, a New Jersey native as well. There's a little fact I forgot about the character. He's originally from New Jersey. I was like, really? So now we have Dave here. It feels like it's a Jersey event. We are able to talk about the City Hall kid, and we've got Dave here. We're talking Indiana Jones.
That's so crazy. I did not know that. I never tagged him as a New Jersey. I would say either he would be New England, like up like in the New England area, or mm-hmm. he was like from like somewhere in the Midwest. Like didn't have to be the state of Indiana, but just somewhere in the Midwest.
Yeah. He seems like he ought to be like a Connecticut guy or Atlanta or something like that. But then it's like, no, look it up. This is like Princeton, New Jersey. Like, okay. I never would have
His father was teaching in Princeton. It wasn't, you know, I wouldn't tag him. I mean, if any of you have seen the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, you know, even as a kid, they were traveling all around the world. You know, they didn't really stick in one place. And, you know, he went and had a lot of fun during World War One. You know.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask this while we're on these kids here, because if this movie has a failing, and it barely does, but I would say the subplot with you know, Hawkman and the other kid, was it Charles and
Dexter? No, it's Raymond. Raymond and Dexter.
Raymond and Dexter. Sorry.
Yeah, Raymond is all
that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Raymond is
Hawkman. I think that there's subplot, like it's not bad by any means, but it does feel like, oh, we need something else. We need, like, maybe they wanted to give Lambert more to do. I'd like we had to instill attention in the school and stuff, because the school is the main thing. We need like boots on the ground there to see like the imminent danger of like, oh, these characters might die and stuff. But everything about like, just the two kids, I'm just a bit like, in some ways you'd almost be like, is this to like appeal to kids in the audience? But then it was like an R-rated movie. So
yeah,
it just feels, it's not like little kids don't go to R-rated movies.
That's true.
You know, they either go with their parents or they sneak in. You know, at least that was what it was back in the 80s and 90s. I don't know how difficult it is these days to sneak in, you know, as a kid.
I think the big things, too, was like back in the day, Die Hard with a Vengeance was just like your parents would have rented it. And then once that video was in the house, and then they step 1 foot out the door, that's, you know, fair game. It's like, right, 18 certificate video. I'm going straight for it, baby.
So, yep.
But yeah, they're again, it's not a bad subplot, but they're kind of like if you need to nip the bathroom.
Right. I mean, we'll go into this a little more later this week when you guys are not here, but you know, it is somewhat of a really huge coincidence that it happens to be that the school that Simon chooses is the school where Zeus's nephews are studying, you know.
Mm.
Because
I don't think you ever see Zeus find out that information too. You think like after the day he's had.
That's right.
And then they're like, oh, so what do you kids get up to today? He's like, oh, there's a bomb in the school. I'm like, that was your school. Jesus Christ.
Well, maybe not so much a coincidence.
Like I said, that's our minute though, right? Because he goes, it was Chester A. Arthur.
That's right.
And then he goes, you know, my nephew's going to Chester A. Arthur Middle School. That's the bomb. And then, yeah, he's like, you know, that's how Simon would know to get your attention. So, okay, let's get into the idea here. So we probably have Simon watching that corner of Harlem. Now, obviously, most of the time he's watching the van, and he's watching when John gets out and gets the sign. So he's got spotters there. So I have to assume at some point, as soon as he sees Zeus walk over, he's like, ha, nice. And then he's like, this guy isn't mad at him. This guy's like talking to him. So maybe they even have like, they got a mic on it, like they got like a boom mic or something to hear what he's saying, to get intelligence of the cops. I don't know, like I'm saying, maybe he's got like I said, he's got a whole military outfit, so he might have like intelligence officers who got mics on the cops. You know, they got like shotgun mics there, like hearing what the cops are saying in the van. So now he hears this guy who's like trying to help him. And then it subs. So I assume like Simon's immediately on the radio, like, find me this guy. And like, his name is Zeus, runs a pawn shop. Like, you know, single guy, closest relatives are like, you know, his sister and her two sons, his nephews.
Well, it's not like they had the internet back then for them to do this. It would be a very difficult search. But I think that, you know, going into the information about the fact that, you know, Zeus has an electronics store and maybe he has relatives and stuff like that. I mean, I think that just makes things too complex here, because, you know, we discussed this a few weeks ago, the fact that, you know, in order to deliver the refrigerator, okay, you had to get that taken care of. You know, there's all these different pieces to the puzzle that need to be done. I mean, we go back to the problem with the tickets to the Yankee Stadium. Why were there two tickets? There should have only been one ticket, because he wouldn't have known that he's sending someone else with John.
Good point.
So I mean, I was on the same team as you, Dave, at the beginning, when I was saying to myself, okay, he planned this because it needed to be taken care of. It doesn't sound as simplistic.
Especially when, you know, Targo doesn't like all this.
Right.
Like, Targo's dealing with it because he's like, all right, this guy is setting up our options to do it. Like, because Targo's like, I'm your bomb guy, I'm your muscle man. So he knows, and his team are like, they can engineer and drill into anything, but he needs Simon's, like, you know, strategic mind to help situate that stuff. So he's like, he's giving Simon that rope, but he's also like, no, stop with the games and this cop guy. Like, just like, let the cops be busy so I could do my work. You're getting really annoying about this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is like fucking 8 a.m. too. He's already like, you're already like changing up the plan and making sure you put a bomb in this specific school.
Right. And no, but even, let's go even further. You know, he would have to then think of how to do the riddle, because, you know, if he didn't know that it was Chester A. Arthur School, so, you know, what was the original thing for him to say? What's 11 of 42? You know, it's like how would he, you know, he had to be on the ball with that. So it goes to show that this stuff theoretically is planned in advance. I mean, in the script, the school is not Chester A. Arthur. It's actually Taft. And in the script, it says 27 of 42, which, again, I like the way that they do 21 of 42. It makes the riddle more conceivable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Out there, I don't remember. I probably would have done the last time I was on. Like, just have to throw out, like, Die Hard with a Vengeance, of course. One of two major third installments in a franchise centered around a villain who leaves riddles for the main character. Because same year, Batman Forever came out. So it was, if you're going to the theater that summer, you know, some of the riddles this year for some reason.
So moving along with this minute, then we have the shot changes when we're back on the Sawmill Parkway. And we see Eric lean out of the car as he shoots out the window and hits the trunk of the Mercedes. And then we get a little bit of an argument once again between John and Zeus. Let me drive. Go, go, go. God damn it. Now, and then they change places while they're driving. Now, have either of you ever changed places while driving? Have any of you? Sorry, not either of you. You're three. How do you say three? Because it's just any, I guess. Yes.
Of all the inconveniences that John McClane and Zeus face throughout this entire day, this little maneuver here ranks one of the top for me, because I would hate the concept of having to be like, you're in the middle of a high speed chase. It's like, let's switch places now. As if that's gonna be easy to do. It would just really be like, no, John, just let me drive. Like, for the love of God, man, you're gonna get killed doing this. But no, I have never done this. I think someone asked me to do this, I would flat out refuse, because it just looks like it would be so annoying.
This seems awfully dangerous. I've done it where, like, have the passenger steer for a while, like, just grab the wheel, kind of like Mickey and Pee-wee in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. But a complete switch, I think that's – it's, you can just pull over.
Not if you're not if someone's shooting at you.
That's going to be much Well, you can, you know, you do like a, you put the hands out the window, you do like a timeout symbol, you know, and they yeah, have that, to respect that.
Yeah, but I don't know if Eric and Misha would do that.
Never done the in motion driver switch.
Yeah. What about you, Dave? Anything?
God, no, nothing. I am a safe driver, and so
I was actually betting money that you would be the one of the three that actually.
The only time I ever feel like I could be an unsafe driver is if the Fury Road soundtrack is on. That's dangerous to have on. And I remember that, actually, that and the Sicario soundtrack, because they really, it's like, and you feel like you're about to like do something very dangerous. So, but no, I'm a very safe driver. So we would definitely have to pull over to the side of the road and we make a whole production of it. And I would get shot immediately by Simon's goons. It's not even funny.
Right. Okay. I mean, the closest I've come to it is I've actually changed clothes while I was driving.
Really?
Yes.
I take a jacket off. That's okay. Yeah. I'll say that. I take a jacket.
No. I took my shoes off. I took my jeans off. And I put on a pair of shorts and sandals.
That's crazy.
You know, while I was driving.
That's crazy. Okay. I know. I took a jacket off. It was too hot once to drive in the car. That was about it. So that's crazy. To take your so definitely the shoes part I get scared about. You're just like, if a shoe gets stuck under one of the pedals, man, you're.
Hey, come on. I've done plane changing automobiles. I know what that could be like.
We did that as well during Batman Returns, because there's a bit where both Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle, there's it keeps cutting back and forth between the two of them getting ready to go and they break up their date to go do a thing. And of course, Bruce is doing all the cool Batman stuff. It goes down to the cave and there's shots of him taking the cowl off, the whatever and stuff. And then it cuts to Selina driving her little crappy mini. And she's there with the mask on her teeth and trying to get the cat suit on and stuff. It's like, you look at Michelle Pfeiffer in that cat suit. Like, imagine trying to put that on while you're driving. Like, that's where you need to be vacuum, fitted into it, basically. You're gonna have to have a little a vacuum cleaner there next door, just like, all right, suction in. Okay, yeah, that's tight. Sew it up.
Yeah. I could see that as a problem.
Yeah.
Now, my question then is okay, let's say that this is conceivable, that you can switch like this, like they do this in movies. We've seen it many times where people are switching. Now, how does the car not decelerate while you're doing that? Because you have to, when you're sitting in the driver's seat, so you know the amount of pressure that you're putting on the pedal. But if someone else is coming from the other side, okay, so let's say John then has to put his left foot on the accelerator in order, but to maintain speed, as Zeus is climbing over him, I don't know.
Well, there is a chance that he put cruise control on. There is a chance, and this is a Mercedes, so chances are it would have some features like that. Mm-hmm. So we can work off of that. And it might have some better traction control, German engineering, what have you. So that's why they're not spinning out immediately in the rain.
No.
Okay. Yep. All right. I can sort of give you a little bit of credit for that. I mean, and also it looks as if Zeus actually puts his head outside of maybe there's a sunroof or something like that. It looks as if he doesn't have enough room within the car to do what he's actually doing.
Yeah.
Or no, sorry, he doesn't put his head out the window. You'd think he would get shot at that point.
Is this before or after they have the big chunk, the big block of gold? Because you never know. Maybe Zeus would put that down on the accelerator.
Oh, they no. They got rid of the gold. They lost the gold a long time ago. They lost it when they actually stole Mercedes, because they left it in the Yugo.
Yeah, that's what Zeus is thinking. It's like, oh no, because we had to switch positions while driving. It'd been really convenient to have something like that to put on the accelerator, so we didn't decelerate in any way during the process. But oh man, I forgot it.
Right. Yeah, especially if they wanted to use that to jump out of the car, while keep the gold on the, on the accelerator.
Hey, you know what's? I want to tell you something, Rob. Well, first I have to ask you a question. I got to tell you something. First is, you said what road this was on. Sure. Is this very north of the city? Because I'm not familiar with this area.
Yeah, this is the Sawmill Parkway.
So is this tell me. Because you're probably better with this.
Connecticut.
North of Manhattan. Yeah, it kind of leads you through, going through Yonkers, from the Bronx to Yonkers up into Connecticut.
Okay, because I think I might have been in this area, because when I drove up to you, that when I went to see the Sox, I think I might have been on this area. So that's one. That's the question I asked, and I thank you very much for the answer. Second thing is, I cannot believe I've just scrubbing here. Around second 14 and the second 15 of what you're showing me here, they do this weird, like, color correction mishap where for, like, a second, it's bright and sunny, and then, like, a frame later, like, oh, yeah, forgot, we got to add in color. And while Zeus is moving, they add in, like, a blue color correction to make it gray and cloudy.
Yeah, I just see that.
So it must have not been as bad of the weather when they were filming it, but they were like, oh, we gotta kind of make it like look a little bit more grayer to really sell the we're in a rainstorm now.
Even though the rainstorm doesn't last very long,
like sun shower.
You know, it really is a sun shower. It's from when of the tunnel, and you know, by the time in a few minutes when they get to the bridge, it's clear and sunny.
I mean, God, we're talking in the middle, a hot summer sun shower. I mean, those things could like. I remember once, like, I was at work, and they're like, oh.
Well, this is October. This is late September, early October.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They're in school. The kids are in school. You're right. Yeah.
We've already done the.
Yeah, you're right.
The research on it because, when he's in the gold depository and he speaks with Carl, and Carl talks about the fact that they talk about an Indian summer.
Oh.
So an Indian summer means that it's either late September, early October. Something like that. You know, we don't have an exact date
when
this takes place.
Yeah.
I always thought it was Memorial Day was when this takes place. And now that I'm doing this minute by minute, I've discovered that I was about 6 months off.
So it turns out this film's actually set number on everyone.
That's right. Right. So the car just swerves back and forth, and then we get some dialogue between John and Zeus as they're doing that. And basically at this point, he screams, why the hell didn't you tell me before? Of course he put the bomb up in that school. And he goes, why would he do that? Make sure you got your complete attention. Jesus, find the fuse panel. What? The fuse panel. Where's the fuse panel of this car? It's right here. Pull out the anti-lock brakes fuse. I don't know which one it is. Well, then yank them all out. And he goes, there, put your head down. Put your fucking head down. This is going to be really bad.
I think this is at the time of in the trilogy actually his most dangerous stunt because now he's adding in a civilian. Because one thing to jump off a building, but it's like, well, it's me. If I die, it's me. And then it's like in the second movie, it's like where else the plane crashes. So it's kind of like it's all or nothing. And in this one, he's like, I'm going to spin this car on the highway in a rainstorm and hit this. With my pistol, I hit a guy who's got a submachine gun trained on us. This, I would consider the most his most dangerous stunt yet.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And it's getting up into, like, Dominic Toretto kind of levels of stuff where, like, yeah, the first movie, of course, is John McClane just trying to survive. He's, you know, scrappy guy, always on the, you know, on the defense, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, then you get into, like, you know, Die Hard 4, where he's on the wing of a stealth jet and all that kind of stuff. But like the little bit of surfing on the truck earlier, and then things like this are kind of like it's tipping over. You can see it now going into like I love this, but it's getting into like okay, this is it's getting
it's crazy. Not as plausible as we would have hoped for.
Yeah.
Like you're like. He should be allotted a few, like one or two per movie. These are the it shouldn't work, but it works ace in the whole cards. And it is, as the movies go on, it's like he's got three of them now. Now he's got four, five. He's just like, he's doing it all.
Yeah. This is
Right. Now, my question is okay, we know that Zeus is an electrician. He doesn't know about fuses and cars also, if he's already learned about electronics and stuff like that. You'd think that it would be a similar type of thing that he would have somewhat of an idea.
Well, maybe he knows how to like work like a small domestic Chevy or a Ford Taurus, but maybe he's not familiar with how a Mercedes is built. But you're right.
Okay, maybe he only knows American cars.
He knows what a fuse is. He just doesn't know which fuse is the anti-lock brakes.
Yeah, he might know the local like. Harlem auto dealer. Maybe he's had to order electronic parts for the auto dealer who's like wherever in Harlem, but it's like it's like electrician who works on like appliances and those stuff, like he's like a Harlem Radio Shack. is got to be different from, yeah, like, you know, the guy who knows, yeah, which fuse panel in the car is going to do what. So he's like, I know where a fuse panel is, but obviously I don't know which one is the brake. So he got him as close as he can. Where's the fuse panel? Here. Which one's the analog brakes? I don't know. And then Jug goes, pull them all.
Yeah. It could be also too, he just has a bit of a prejudice against German stuff as well. And that's why Simon wanted to get him in. It's like, oh, is that let's see
how you deal with this. Probably one of those lines is probably the power steering. So now John has to like really turn it. He has no power steering. Now going fast on the road in the rain. And he's gotta make the shot one-handed as he's spinning the wheel.
Forget about the fact that he has no power steering. He just told him to pull all of the fuses. The car should have probably stopped.
Yeah, I was gonna say like, one of them could be some kind of auto brake line where it's like the thing just immediately just slams its own brakes on for like German engineering safety or something, or pops the airbags.
Yeah. So then we get the final line during their argument where John says, "Listen to me, hang the fuck on, all right?" And then this is an amazingly choreographed scene. There's no question about it. I mean, we talked about the fact that you know, it's completely improbable and you know, it's sort of jumping the shark at this point. But you know, the fact that John is able to then spin the car around, it's a good thing he's a lefty because he's able to stick his hand out of the, you know, out the window quite easily. You know, the car spins around, he shoots, and then, you know, they crash into the truck, and the truck goes off to the side, and then the Mercedes spins out of control and then does a flip, which doesn't really make much sense. But again, it's just cool to look at the way that they do it.
I just assumed it was like the speed when the back of the trunk hits the grass and it's hitting traction now. It's not on a slick road. Now it's hitting like dirt and gravel. I just assumed that rather than slowing the car down, the momentum of the trunk's ass just flips the car.
No, but it, like they hit it and then they keep going. They keep going and then.
Oh, it's true.
You know, maybe hitting the back of the tail end of the truck makes the car, you know, do a two wheelie and then at that point it flips over, you know, but the door also flies open. Good thing John was wearing a seatbelt, even though we didn't see him put on the seatbelt after he, you know, switched over taking Zeus's place. But
yeah, you're very right. Yeah, John would, yeah, he'd get his ass flung out. I love how there's just so many drivers still behind kind of keeping
and nobody gets hit.
They hear and see gunfire
and nobody gets hit.
And yeah, no one gets hit. But you're like, you're driving behind a car and the car starts having a shootout. Do you still like, yeah, I'm going to keep up the speed with this. Like, this will just resolve itself, honey. Don't worry.
I just keep driving. Yeah.
I'd be like, pull up to the side of the road and be like, let's just give this thing like 10 solid minutes. I'm just going to stay
seriously
out of it.
Seriously. All right. Do any of you guys have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the scripts?
No, I think I'm noted up for this minute.
Yeah, I'm all spun out.
All right, so very good. I see where you're going with that. All right, so as we talked about last week, the script is a little different because it's actually Targo who's in the car chasing John, and then at a certain point, John is chasing Targo, and then so we continue here where it says, you know, the Sawmill Parkway. They're at a toll booth. The BMW moves through the toll booth. Instead of throwing change to the coin catcher, Targo throws a load of plastique explosives and roars through the toll booth. The Mercedes that McLean and Zeus are approaching the toll booth, McLean staring through the windshield. He sees Targo throwing the plastique in the coin catcher. And he says, "You saw that? He just rigged the toll with C4. You ever jump out of a moving vehicle?" McLean grabs the library book and the Samsonite briefcase. Library book is, instead of going to Yankee Stadium in the script, they... Zeus had to go to the New York Public Library to get a book, which gives them a clue to the whole thing. So they grab the library book and Samsonite briefcase. Zeus says no, but I have a feeling. And then the Targo watches the Mercedes approaching the toll booth. He presses a detonator in his hand. The toll booth blows sky high. McLean and Zeus roll away from the toll booth on the pavement, covering up as pieces of the Mercedes and toll booth rain down around them, clattering on the pavement. Targo looks at the burning car and toll booth in his rearview mirror. He smiles for the first time. Wheels squealing away from the toll booth, and a lady stands on the side of the road watching her station wagon roar up the parkway. McClay's strength. His right shoulder's been dislocated, his left shoulder's gunshot. His face is cut and bruised. Through the windshield, we see Targo's BMW. No way, he thinks we just survived that. He'll lead us right to Simon. Simon. He brakes, begins to pull over. I'm going back. McClain reaches his leg over, stomps on the accelerator. My sons are in that school, McClain. The car is swerving all over the highway. So that's another thing. This place, and there was a place that we talked about on Friday in the script where Zeus actually says it's his sons, as opposed to saying it's his nephews, even though at the beginning of the script, it's nephews. I don't know how that mistake happened along the way, you know, where maybe at some point it was supposed to be that Zeus was divorced and it's his sons, you know. Don't really know.
It could have been as well that maybe it's supposed to be like an emotional thing and that like he thinks of them as his sons. So he's like, no, they're my nephews. And then when it comes to like down to the wire, he'll refer to them as his sons because like emotionally, that's where his brain's at kind of thing, you know?
Just Die Hard with a Vengeance seems like it was being written and kind of like on the spot. And the idea they didn't know the ending is they have the alternate ending and trying to make it all work, and it is lucky it's
as good because there are three different endings, because the script has a different ending, and then we have the ending with the law, and then we have the ending that actually works. All right, so every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan directed movies. So Niall and Sean, you guys have already done this. So we're gonna hear what Dave has to say about these.
All right. I mean, like,
so start with your number five and work your way up.
Number five, okay. I'm listening. I don't know if any of your guests already brought it up. I'm gonna go zagging. I'm gonna zag on number five. Going 13th Warrior. I think
you are the very first person to list the 13th Warrior.
Oh, this is great. Okay. I enjoy this film. I have not seen it in a while, but I remember we watched it in class. Because we were covering Beowulf. So, and this is before I knew about McTiernan's actual catalog. I'm still like early in high school. And so the teacher puts on 13th Warrior and we talked about, you know, Beowulf and stuff. And I just remember like, this is great. This is a great adaptation of Beowulf. And then Robert Zemeckis did his CGI one. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. Like I like the 13th Warrior better. Like it just works for me. For some reason.
That's a standard reaction to every film Robert Zemeckis has made in the last 25 years. I'm sorry, man.
You're working hard on it, but I can't do it. So yeah, 13th Warrior is my fifth. I like it as a. I love this idea of it. It's a balls of the wall. Antonio Banderas playing an Iraqi scholar who slowly learns the Nordic Viking language. They do. It's like they all start talking Norwegian. They slowly make their voices become English or. Whatever language he's understanding, and so good. All right, fourth, Last Action Hero. I know that movie was production hell, and I would tell if no one's brought up yet the Nick Semlin book, The Last Action Heroes, that came out this year. Great book to read about action movies, and The Last Action Hero. It's great because by the time you get to that book, is when that discussion between the 80s muscle bound actors. And the everyman relatable hero starts colliding. And it's like, that's what kind of, and also the same weekend of Jurassic Park. So it's just like all the signs of the times are coming right at that point. You do a satire on action movies at the same time that movie gets bombed because CGI has beaten out the big man in the box office. And now CGI dinosaurs and soon to be CGI twisters and what have you will be going forward. So great, great movie, and it's a great cultural like a landmark in film history, in my opinion. It's like it's imperfect, but I think it really it's like at this time is when what the producers and the movie studios thought was going to happen, and what really happened by the audience's perspective. Three, Die Hard with a Vengeance. I mean, we're here talking about it, so I don't know what else I can say about it. Predators, number two. I mean, it's a damn horror film that he couches in an action film. I think it's great because he does, once again, he satirizes all these muscle-bound guys. Each one of these guys could be their own lead of an action movie. You know, any one of them, even if it was like a B movie that you would see on West Coast video shelves, it's like any one of these guys, you could easily, you put the gun in their hand and they could like clean up crime or they could save the day. And it's like, these guys are getting their asses handed to them by a damn, alien hunter. It's amazing. And then obviously one is Die Hard, and I feel like, how about this? I'm going to eliminate Die Hard because we know it's good. It's kind of like when they take off Nirvana on like top rock bands.
How can you really, you can eliminate it from, if it's the top of your top five, why eliminate it?
Well, you know what it is? It's like the header. It's like the header of the document. Like, you know, the header is Die Hard, and it's like, but what else of John McTiernan? But I mean, yeah.
No, but the whole idea is to give it points. You're taking away 5 points from Die Hard at this point if you do it that way.
Fair, I did the same when last time I was on for a later question in the week about the trilogies, and I was just like, right, I'm just taking Lord of the Rings and Star Wars out of that equation because we all know those are the best. You know, so sometimes you just got to go.
Okay. All right, we all know what the best is.
Here's the hint. The trilogy you think I'm going to talk about when we get to the trilogies, I'm doing the same thing. I'm not putting it in because it is such a – it is – by definition, the personality of Dave.
Fair enough. So that's something that Sean would know a lot about on Spinal Tap Minute, though. It's essentially kind of making the amps go up to 11 here.
Yes, it is the 11th. Like, yeah, it is.
Why would you make that number one?
Okay, so, what is your number one then?
I will admit, it's hard because I've been knocking it back and forth. If it's Hunt for October, Thomas Crown Affair, I'm going to go with Thomas Crown Affair because it's like either the man who starts the Tom Clancy verse that sadly has not gotten anything good since Michael B. Jordan's movie. Like, they just stopped for some reason. Like, we did the Jack Ryan shows, we did Michael B. Jordan movie, and then we're just not going to do anything. And I'm like, where's that Rainbow Six movie? You're going to promise me that you're probably going to get both Krasinski and Michael B. Jordan to do a Rainbow Six movie, and they just haven't done about it. So I'm taking it down off the list because it's so good, but time has not been kind to what McTiernan did. I will do the Thomas Crown Affair because now everyone's looking at good ass pictures of Brosnan and they're like, this guy could still do old man Bond and it could be like the Logan of the Bond verse and it could buy Eon or Sony Pictures more time to figure out what they're going to do with a reboot. Like, if they just said Bond is back and it just says, old Brosnan, and he's like, oh my God, I still got some tricks up mine, you know, whatever he says. And it's just like, we would watch it and we wouldn't question it. We're like, we're still in the GoldenEye universe. We're not, Craig's not involved. And this is just like the next line after Die Another Day. And nobody would be upset, not a single one. And then they could be like, we'll figure out whatever the next reboot of Bond is. But like, you know, that if I don't even know if Dalton's up for it, but like if Dalton wanted to do something, I would, you know, as a cameo, I wouldn't mind. So I would put Thomas Crown Affair as like one of the best Brosnan Bond films that isn't.
Right. Okay. Excellent. So, Dave, you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yes, please. If you want to hear me rant more about movies, I talk about Mystery Men on 5 Minutes of Mystery. And the Facebook group, the Champion City Lakeside Diners Club. You know, maybe Deadpool will talk about Mystery Men. We don't know because I'm recording it before it comes out. It's possible.
All right. All right. So, Sean, you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. I did a podcast with Dave where we covered the movie Groundhog Day 1 minute at a time. And that's at groundhogminute.com. And I also do Next Scene where we cover pop culture 1 scene at a time. That's at nextscenepod.com. And coming for 2024 is Casablanca Minute at Casablanca Minute or CasablancaMin.com. So check those out.
All right. And Niall.
You can find me, like, the big main show that I do is Bat Minutes, where we talk about the Batman films 1 minute at a time. Although our current season, we're doing a little mini season on the Batman Beyond movie Return of the Joker, which is in 5 minute chunks. We're doing so that's a little bit of a flip, but the movies from 89 through to 97 are all been they've all been covered minute by minute. So that's all there for you, amongst various hiatus episodes was on this, that, and the other. Then another show we did that me and my co-host John that was completed a couple of months ago now is Miami Minutes, wherein we talked about the craptacular Taekwondo classic.
Dave
was briefly on that for one special episode as well.
My father, I love it.
Ah, you see, finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So Until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
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 Hurrah! Hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah! Hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.